Well, first, as Auckland commuters face more lengthy delays, what are the plans to fix the Auckland Harbour Bridge? And why some structural engineers warn it could be time to start thinking about the 60-year-old bridge's long-term viability. Four of the bridge's eight lanes are closed after a freak gust of wind on Friday blew a truck into a structurally important load-bearing strut and damaged it. It's hoped a new strut will be in place within the next few days, with overnight closures on the southbound lanes to make that possible. This would allow two extra lanes to open, bringing the number of lanes operating to six. But before vehicles are allowed back onto two of the four lanes, rigorous testing will have to be done. A permanent solution is expected to be 2 to 3 weeks away. With us first, Alessandra Palermo, who's a professor in structural engineering at the University of Canterbury. Welcome to 9 to Noon.
Good morning. Good morning, Catherine.
How do you describe the nature of the damage to the bridge and the efforts to fix it?
The nature of the damage is quite significant, because you can see that one of the strut, which is actually a primary element which sustain the load of the weight of the bridge and allows to, you know, to carry the traffic vehicles, has been severely damaged. And then not only that strut, but also the connection at the bottom, there have been some bolts have been sheared off. So it's quite, I would say, amazing how a truck that tipped over could cause such an extensive damage to a critical component of the bridge. And then what was the other
involved in fixing it? First, the temporary fix, what's involved and its prospects. NZTA optimistic that after testing their intermediate repair, they might be able to open later in the week. What are they trying to do?
I mean, obviously, I don't have all the details, but I think what they're trying to do is to reinstate a new strut, and I think in a way, I think the time frame is a good time frame to me. Technically, if you imagine that if you have like a car and you want to replace a component, these components are off the shelf, right? And then you go to the workshop, it's easy to do it, and the fix is quite quick. In this case, there are particularity, which means that you need to fabricate the element, you need to make sure you have the right tolerances. And then, most importantly, how you actually install the element, because the bridge now has redistributed the load, because that strut is damaged, it's not carrying anything. And so you have to install in a way that then you can repristinate, redistribute the load to that strut. So they need to apply some jacks and in order to do that. But I think the time frame, it seems to be, obviously, they've done their own planning and they're trying to do as fast as they can. I think I will not consider this a ordinary event, right? So they usually, when you maintain a bridge, there are things that you see that are deteriorating, and then you start planning in advance. In this particular case, was an exceptional scenario that caused huge disruption, and so that means that there is a level of uncertainty and there is some risk that they factor in within the time frame.
Could we talk about two more different time zones? One is getting a permanent, in inverted commas, solution to this bridge damage. Some weeks away, we are told. What is going to be involved logistically and in an engineering sense in getting that bridge back to where it was before this accident?
I mean, when you design in civil engineering and structures, usually you do a proper assessment, and then you check what are the past damage. And then what, in this particular case, you have an existing structure You have to make sure that you design the element and you, in a way that whatever is going to be the replacement is not altering the existing condition. So, for example, you can't put a strut which is stronger or stiffer, like, because then it's going to have an impact on the other elements. So you have to do in a way that you have to design it and then manufacture in a way that you pretty much install the same element in the bridge without altering the existing road path. So that's quite challenging. So in a way, there is then, once you've done the design step, then you have an internal peer review. So there will be, this design will be checked by an external party, independent party, and then there will be comments coming back. So the designer have to check again the calculations or anything that may be missed. And then after that, we'll go to the contractor. And then even the contractor may come back and say, hey, there is something wrong with the tolerances. So it's a sort of iterative process, which obviously, in a way, slow down the process. As I said, it's not like it's very different from, a product that comes from, IT or mechanical engineering, where it's like an industrial process. Here is like an ad hoc piece of structure, which has to be fitted on an existing structure. So you have to be extremely careful that you whatever you replace is actually exactly like for like.
And then installing it, does that take a particular extra amount of time, or is it more all this preparation, all the calculations, all the testing that takes the time?
I think it's like when maybe you will ask me later. It's like when you talk about a new bridge. It's more talking about it's not more about the preparation sometimes than actually doing things. But I guess the installation will be another challenging exercise, because what you have to do, you have to jack in that position. You have to put some jacks and in order to stress the main component, the main arch, and then install the strut and then release the jacks in order that the strut takes the load. Because if you just simply now replace the load without doing this procedure with these hydraulic jacks, pretty much the strut is not taking any load, because the load has been already redistributed on other elements. So it's quite challenging. So I don't think and the TA and the engineers involved with the Alliance were obviously planning to have a scenario like that.
Can we talk about its longer-term prospects? It just seems to go on forever, resolving Auckland's harbour crossings. It's been discussed for decades, the prospects of a second crossing, and it's allied to management flows. It's allied to traffic flows. It's allied to how the city has grown. All sorts of modelling going on, and then, of course, the practicalities involved in getting it constructed. Are we now at the point, though, where we seriously need to talk about the lifespan of the existing bridge? And we need to accelerate talk of a second crossing, because there is going to be a time limit on how much this bridge can be expected to take.
Usually when you think about a crossing, a new crossing, in general people say, oh, it's going to cost a lot of money, and it certainly is a huge cost. Having said that, we need to be also we need to know what are the costs for maintaining the Auckland Harbour Bridge, which I think we should maintain, because is a part of the history of Auckland and of New Zealand. Having said that, the bridge, when was designed more than 60 years ago, with a design lifespan of 50 years. And basically, the alliance that was put in place, if I'm not mistaken, in 1999, is pretty much an alliance dedicated to monitor the bridge. And so their role is actually to actually extend the life and make sure that the bridge is safe. Obviously, I always make the comparison with a person. A bridge is like a person, if you wish, which because it's exposed to the environment, start aging. And so obviously the performance could decay. The main difference between a bridge and a person is that even the bridge get older, we ask the bridge to take more load. You know, we to be more performant, because if you think about the traffic vehicles passing on that bridge, have been constantly increasing. Now I think we are close to 180,000 vehicles per day. So that basically means that if we have a constant growth of population, certainly is not sustainable. And I think this is not just thinking about the bridge, but thinking about the proper planning, what's happening in terms of population growth, and how can we make the life of the commuters far better. The other comment that I want to make is that this Auckland Harbour Bridge is a truss bridge. This is a typical form of structure that was common in the Victorian period, because the steel was the main structural material. And these sort of bridges have a lot of elements, a lot of connections. So it's also require more maintenance to monitor the bridge, because you have more connection, you have more elements. If you think about the new recent modern bridges, built with a similar size, they don't go with that form of structures, because it's going to have high maintenance cost. So it's certainly a discussion that we should have, but I think there should be it should be considered. I think to me it is now becoming an issue for people, and has to be taken seriously. And I think it's if you take it seriously, you can even build a new crossing in a very short time frame.
How long?
I just give you an example. And this is a bridge, is obviously where I'm emotionally connected, is the Morandi Bridge, the bridge that collapsed 2 years ago. That bridge was very important, because it was State Highway 10 of in the western part of Italy. And obviously they were losing a lot of money for the economy, and they basically design and build the bridge in less than 2 years. The length is more than 1 kilometer. So it's similar to the length of the Auckland Harbour Bridge. Of course, the Auckland Harbour Bridge is an open ocean, so there are obviously more challenges than the Morandi Bridge in Italy. But I believe if there is if the problem is taken seriously, a bridge like that, if you build a new crossing, it could be done in a time frame of maximum 5 years. But starting with the planning, is the most critical part. But then build a bridge, it could be done in 1 year, 1.5 years. So I think it's, I heard about time frames, more than 10 years. I think yes, if you keep talking, we can take 10 years. But we have seen, when we have situation like Italy, you have a scenario where it was a catastrophic scenario, was important to get back because of the community, and was done very quickly. And we had also the COVID, so it was opened in April this year.
The transport agency at the moment says a tunnel is at the forefront of its new business case for another Auckland Harbour crossing. It won't discuss the contents of the business case. Is that a more complex engineering and construction process, and what sort of time?
Yeah, the tunnel, I'm not an expert on tunnel, but usually a tunnel is more cost efficient if you have a long length. So in this case, I've seen the rough, what I reading, I mean, probably I don't have the details. By doing with the second crossing, the length will be more than 1 kilometer, I think. But I'm not 100% sure it will be more cost effective than doing having another bridge. Obviously, I'm a little bit biased because I'm I like bridges.
You're a bridge builder.
yeah. So in a way, but I think let's say the structure, the tunnel, is not a complex structure, but within the tunnel, when you cross the tunnel, then you put a lot of let's call it bridge girders. So in a way, there is a bridge within the tunnel. So it's not really so there is a complexity. Sorry.
We'll leave it. Yes, there's an extra complexity. There's the tunnel itself, and then there's the bridge. We'll leave it there, Alessandro. I really appreciate your time. Thank you. Alessandro Palumo, Professor of Structural Engineering at the University of Canterbury. It's 24 minutes past nine. Well, as we said, the Transport Agency has completed a business case for another crossing and says a tunnel is the most likely option. Transport blogger Matt Lowry is the editor of Greater Auckland, formerly known as transportblog.co.nz, and is with us now. Good morning, Matt.
Morning, Catherine.
I'm just reading this morning that the NZTA, the alternative routes, the Western Ring route, I think, filled up and got up to two and a half hour journeys. So here we go. Issued at 7:35 a.m. Perhaps to go back to the Harbour Bridge option, as travel time via State Highways 18, 16 and 20 got up to taking 2.5 hours. So it's hurting there at the moment. What is your view on this event as a stepping off point for getting serious about some other matters?
Yes, so I mean, it obviously highlights that there is a fragility in the network, that where we, you know, one of the challenges with Auckland in general is that we have a number of pinch points around the region, and it's very hard to bypass those. And if something goes wrong with any of those pinch points, and that whether it be on the rail network, whether it be on the motorway network, if anything goes wrong on just one of those, it can have cascading effects across the entire region. And that's partly just a geography issue that we have in Auckland, and so it makes it very difficult to sometimes avoid these big flow-on effects that occur.
When you hear people talking about what to do from here, what are some of the key matters you have identified? First, on the bridge itself and its congestion points, you've raised the issue of that's not having a dedicated bus lane. So you've got dedicated bus lanes that come to the convergence point, and then what, buses join everybody else. What would be the impact of having a dedicated lane? Would it inevitably mean longer queues for cars, for other vehicles, even though a dedicated bus lane would become much more efficient for the buses? What would be the modelling effect of doing that?
Yeah. So one of the fantastic things about the bridge at the moment is that while it has grown over time with usage, one of the number of people crossing the bridge every day is actually much higher now than it ever was. But a lot of that's coming down to buses. So in the morning peak, about more than a third of the people crossing the bridge are doing so on a bus now, and that's just showing that there's a huge demand, a huge increase. And so the number of people crossing by car has stayed relatively similar in the morning peak, but the number of people crossing by bus has risen from almost nothing to about a third of the people crossing. So that has shown there's a huge amount of people crossing the bridge rather than the number of necessary vehicles. And so that, you know, we've got a third of people crossing the bridge and they don't even have a dedicated lane to make sure that they've got a fast but reliable journey, and that's something that I think we need to address going forward.
How do you approach the question of the second crossing? Again, just not what it is structurally, but how it ought to fit into traffic management and traffic flows. There have been a lot of improvements, right? But you're always chasing your tail, because even as there are improvements in public transport options, improvement in dedicated lanes, the volume is not receding at all, the volume of total traffic. So when you look at the planning, and perhaps soon to become more prioritised planning for a second crossing, how does it fit into the overall modelling of the traffic?
Yeah, so one of the things we need to remember is not just the crossing that's the problem. And in fact, often with, even as it is now, the bridge is not necessarily the least capacity point. It's actually the highest capacity point on the network, because it's the motorways either side that are challenging. And so one of the problems with another crossing, in general, but particularly another road crossing, is that we either turn a fire hose of traffic onto the city at the same time as we're trying to take the traffic out of the city. Alternatively, on the other side of the harbour, we've got the issue of the likes of Esmond Road and Oniwa Road and all these other roads that interconnect with the motorways throughout the North Shore. They're already congested. They're already completely choked with traffic. And if we're adding another crossing, we're encouraging more people to drive. We're putting more pressure on those local roads, which can be more pressure to then widen those roads, take out more houses, put more capacity in for those roads to be able to cope with the demand from a new crossing. So it's not just about can we build another crossing. It's how do we deal with the entire transport network and make that more efficient. And that's a much bigger and a much harder question to solve, because it's a much wider piece of work.
What about tunnels that are dedicated just to one type of transport? Does that help or hinder? Is it logistically impractical in some cases for some... go ahead.
Yeah, so some work that the NZTA released last year suggested that the absolute best option for dealing with a harbour crossing was actually to build a dedicated public transport crossing. So whether it be light rail, it could be a busway, but most likely it would be some form of rail crossing. That would actually provide the best overall outcome for traffic. So if we add another crossing, we actually encourage more traffic and it makes congestion worse. And that's the thing, obviously, we're trying to avoid. So a dedicated public transport crossing would actually work really well. We could upgrade the busway, which has got an even shorter capacity design life than the rest of the motorway network. And then and that's just because of the huge growth that's occurred. And then we can hook that into the city and make that public transport journey really fantastic and make it work really well.
Do you believe this will prompt finally some action on... I hear you ambivalent about a second tunnel, because straight away you just see it as a conduit for more traffic, all trying to, as you say, be a fire hose into the same space. But is it necessary for resilience apart from anything else? And do you think this event is going to prompt more rapid action?
Well, I think that the point you highlighted at the beginning of the Western Ring Route has been put in place to help provide that resilience, and we've seen it still overloaded. And so the challenges, even if we put this additional crossing in place, it wouldn't necessarily solve the problems we've got now, because it would be full too, and we still have congestion. What we can do is provide that resilience through another alternative, so particularly that rapid transit crossing. If we build a light rail crossing or bus crossing dedicated for that, then we can actually provide a good level of resistance that people can quickly shift to moving, to using the buses or trains or whatever it is that we build this tunnel or crossing for, and able to get around the city still relatively unaffected. And that's really how we provide resistance, resiliency to the network.
What's the time frame in which the public transport use of the Auckland Harbour Bridge has grown to being 1 in 3 vehicles? Is that what you told me earlier?
Yeah, so that's over about a decade. So from the time the Northern Busway opened in about 2008, it's grown from a very small number to being almost a third of traffic, or a third of people, I should say.
And is it logistically possible, again, for that dedicated bus lane that you want to see to have feeder traffic from wherever those public routes are converging, if you know what I'm saying? In other words, is it possible for all the public transport to converge in a logical way and use one lane?
Yes, it is, and that's effectively what happens now. So most of the bus routes on the North Shore, many of the bus routes, they converge into busway stations. People get off the bus and they transfer onto one of these bigger, larger busway buses, the big double-decker buses. And those are the majority of the buses that are crossing the Harbour Bridge in the morning or during the day these days. And they're carrying, they've got a lot of capacity and they're able to move into the city relatively quickly.
Thank you very much, Matt Lowry, who is he's the editor of Greater Auckland, which is formerly known as transportblog.co.nz. Just on this matter, a statement through from NZTA. Longer-term planning for an additional Waitemata Harbour connection has been underway for some time and is ongoing. Auckland Transport, the New Zealand Transport Agency, and Auckland Council are working in partnership to investigate it. The business case has been completed. The indicative business case builds on previous work exploring the feasibility of a tunnel crossing. And while this remains the most likely option, there's still further planning required to investigate the need, timing, function and form of an additional crossing before a final decision is made. This long-term solution would be New Zealand's biggest transport investment, costing billions of dollars, and will take more than 10 years from now until opening. And just looking at that latest advice also on the bridge itself and the temporary fix, NZTA will start installing a temporary fix to the damaged big bridge strut on the Auckland Harbour Bridge Tuesday night. That's tonight. While this temporary repair work is underway, the southbound lanes of the Harbour Bridge will be closed overnight. And, of course, four middle lanes remain closed at the moment. The bridge is at half capacity with only two lanes open in both directions. The clip-ons, they are hoping that the temporary work might see two more lanes open by the end of the week.